This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you. Shopify is a global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real life store stage, all the way to the, hey Marge, did we just hit a million orders stage? Shopify is there to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout, 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Running a growing business means getting the insights you need wherever you are. With Shopify's single dashboard, you can manage orders, shipping, and payments from anywhere. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the United States, and Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/ifanboy, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/ifanboy now to grow your business no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/ifanboy.
You're listening to the iFanboy.com Pick of the Week podcast, episode 206, sponsored by Blast Rider from Funimation, In-Stock Trades, and iFanboy listeners like you.
There's a man going around taking names, and he decides who to free and who to blame. Everybody won't be treated all the same. There'll be a golden ladder reaching down when the man comes around.
Well, hello, everyone. You've stumbled into another iFanboy Pick of the Week podcast. This, as we said, is episode 206. That's a big old number up there. I am Josh Flanagan. I'm here with Ron Richards.
Hello.
And this week, Connor, he may be south of the border. He may have passed down old Juarez, down the old South America way in Portugal. So we have a special guest this week, Chris Niesman from Around Comics.
Hey, guys.
Hello.
We're popping your iFanboy cherry, I think.
I know. I was so happy whenever Ron finally asked me to be on the show. You know, you can't presume things. Tom's been on. You even got Jason from 11 o'clock on. So I was like, you know, Ron tells me he likes me, but he never asked me to be on the show.
We wanted to make sure that you completed the program first, and then eventually we just gave up.
Yeah.
We'll get through his 12 steps and I'll forget this. He's never
going to. I had to be seen in public wearing a power and responsibility shirt.
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm. No. But it was time, long overdue. So thank you.
Your name's in the book
thank you.
Now. We put you there. Yeah. You're in the book. But you know what? They did Joe Pesci right after that happened. Anyway.
I'm on a list.
iFanboy.com is our website where we write about and talk about comic books because we love them so very much. Every week we read a whole bunch of the books that come out that week, and one of us has the job of picking the one that they enjoyed the best. They call that the pick of the week, write a review about it that goes up on a Wednesday night, and then we talk about it on this podcast along with the other books from the week and anything else we can get ourselves into trouble yapping about. At the end, we've got more stuff to give away. It's a big October giveaway month for iFanboy members. Of course, the iFanboy members are the people who've decided to contribute a little something extra to the iFanboy community, and we love them for that. Before we get going, there are going to be some spoilers because we're going to be talking about the books that came out this week. So if you haven't read your books yet, you may want to wait and come back later. Or, you know what? Live dangerously. Try the spicy Thai chili. You don't know. It could be delicious. Ron, you have the pick this week. Get all charitable on us.
All right. Well, so yes, I did have the pick, and I was after the – I don't know about you guys, but the past couple of weeks have been fairly brutal as far as the stack of books. So I was kind of welcome when I saw that I was only getting – I only picked up like 10 or so books. It was a light week. But as often happens on a light week, there's not a lot to choose from. But that doesn't get in the way of this week's pick, which probably I don't know if it would have been the pick on a big week with like Blackest Night and all these kind of things going on with these big event type things, but I'm kind of glad it came out in this kind of week because it really deserves some attention. The pick of the week was Liberty Comics number 2, published by Image Comics in association with the CBLDF, which if you don't know what that acronym means, it's the Comic Book Legal Defense Fund. Probably one of their in the world of comics, there are two kind of important charitable organizations. There's the Hero Initiative, which, Chris, you've done a lot of work for, and we've Absolutely. Done some work for as well, which, you know, benefits creators and when they're sick and need help.
I'm sure it's more complex than that.
Yeah, exactly.
It is easier to say. Yeah, yes. If you're in the battle of the comic book charities, Hero, much easier than
CBLDF.
But so go to heroinitiative.org for more information on that.
They're great. They're a great organization. Yep. They're very
good people.
But then also important is the CBLDF, the Comic Book Legal Defense Fund, which pretty much legally protects anybody who gets into a little trouble, namely retailers who sell dirty comics. But again,
we're going to go ahead and just go to their website for their explanation of it. And I want you to ignore what Ron says.
Yeah, it's go to CBLDF.org. And
jump in here real quick. I just read Tencent Plague. And if you want to understand why comic book companies and comic book creators need legal defense, read Tencent Plague, because if the CBLDF had been around in the 1950s, comics would be a lot different today.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. And just by the recent cases that have been going on now that they've been involved in, it just shows the importance of this as an organization. And Neil Gaiman is a huge supporter, and lots of, you know, like if you look at their board, you know, it's their board of directors is like, you know, like Peter David, Neil Gaiman, you know, Paul Levitz, Larry Marder. I mean, like, you know, real, you know, important people in the comic industry are involved in this organization. So, but how does that tie into the Liberty Comics? Well, this is the second issue of a kind of a charity comic book where the CBLDF has pulled together some great creators and put out an issue of a comic, and all the proceeds go to the CBLDF. The first issue came out. Oh, geez, was it this San Diego or last year San Diego? It was this year. It was last year San Diego. Yeah. And it had some great creators in there, and this kind of continues that tradition. It's got a $4.99 price tag, but it's for charity, and it is an oversized issue. It's not just a 22-page issue. It's jam-packed. There are like 12 stories in it and a bunch of pinups, and I'm just gonna read off to you guys some of the names involved in this book. Jason Aaron.
Ooh.
Moritat.
He's good.
Moritat.
Ooh.
Ben Templesmith.
Ooh.
Mike Allred. Dave Johnson. Paul Pope, Brian Wood, Catherine Stewart Immonen, Jimmy Palmiotti, Paul Grist, Dave Gibbons, China Clugston, Cameron Stewart, Neil Gaiman, Jim Lee, John Romita Jr., Tim Sale.
Yeah.
So with those kind of names, I mean, those are some of the biggest names.
I mean, could they have gotten some, I don't know, credible comic book creators for this?
Exactly.
But so someone with a little bit of, you know, chutzpah to get some of these copies off the shelves. I don't know.
Gentlemen, where is Dan Slott? I ask you this.
But so it was a great anthology issue with a bunch of, you know, kind of short stories. You know, Jason Aaron teamed up with Moritat and did a kind of a humorous story about the first censor in caveman times, which was really cool. Ben Templesmith and Ben McCool give the first exposure to sequential art from their new book Choker, which is coming out next year, which by evidence of this 6-page story is going to be awesome. If you are a fan of Fell or a fan of Templesmith in general, you need to find this issue and pick it up just to get this preview of Choker to see what it's going to be like. You know, I'm just going through it. You know, Jamie S. Rich, Mike Allred, and Dave Johnson teamed up on a very kind of satirical story about selling out in the Madman universe. Get an awesome 6-page black and white Paul Pope story with his character Loverman, which is awesome. So some Brian Wood art from his Channel Zero line of books, which I haven't seen in years.
It was an original Channel Zero story.
Yep,
that's pretty hey. Good deal.
Yeah,
that's going back to you know, when nobody knew him.
Exactly. Phase. Yeah, yeah. It's kind of origins, and if you read DMZ and you haven't read Channel Zero, you go find Channel Zero from Image Comics because you're gonna love it. You know, Kathy and Stewart Immonen teamed up on a very cute kind of 3-pager. Jimmy Palmiotti wrote a Painkiller Jane story that Jim Rugg drew. And if you haven't seen Jim Rugg's art, so good. Every story was like, the thing about a good anthology is that it should, at least in my opinion, is that, you know, it should be a blast to read and take you a while, because even though the story is only six pages, the change in art style and the change in writing style, you can kind of get lost in. And that's exactly what happened. A great Paul Grist, Jack Staff story, which, Chris, didn't you just get into Paul Grist?
I am just about finished with the Everything Used to Be Black and White, which, yep, if you can find that, is just fantastic. And it's one of those that Paul Grist is one of those artists that at first glance you're like, oh, look at the cute little indie guy. But once you get into it, there's some fantastic stuff going on with not just his art, but the way that he unfolds stories. So yeah, becoming a very big Paul Grist fan.
Vindication, because Josh and Connor don't listen to me with Paul Grist.
I think that we've all had those artists. My first one was probably Jack Kirby, where I was like, oh, those are silly old comics. Yeah. And it hasn't been since I really started diving into the medium and the art form and really, really fallen in love with comics all over again, that I've been able to go back and look at Kirby's stuff and go, wow, okay, yeah, he was the king. He was awesome.
Paul Grist is not Jack Kirby.
No, but that's what I'm, I'm just comparing the, have I ever read
Kane by Paul Grist?
No.
Yeah. Go ahead and tell me what you make of that.
Well,
I got a couple copies I can send you.
To be fair, if he's starting out with Jack Staff, Kane will be fantastic, because Jack Staff is way out there. Way, like, you, Josh, you would hate Jack Staff.
Yeah. I've tried it.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So, but
really,
yeah. I was reading upside down for a while. I was like, "What is this?"
Not pick that. No, because I love the way that the story bounces. I would think that this would be right in Josh's wheelhouse. Yes. I don't know.
I throw curveballs.
Yeah.
Okay.
So, anyway, about this.
Anyway, moving on. So, there was a great apocalyptics story from Cameron Stewart and Ray Fox Oni title, and this one was colored, which was the first time I've seen these characters in color, which is pretty cool. And then finally, the piece de resistance is the six page Neil Gaiman, Jim Lee kind of jam. Which you hear Jim Lee and you probably have, you know, connotations come in. This is like nothing you've ever seen from Jim Lee. Grayscale, black and white, very artistic, sketchy, very kind of emotional art, which is, you know, which was really, really a different, you know, different kind of angle from Jim Lee. All in all, great book. It goes to a great cause. You get some great comics out of it. And I really, you know, like, it's at the end of the day, at the end of my stack, this is the book that I was like, you know, that was the most fun to read. It was the most diverse. It was the most interesting. So
yeah. Nice.
Lovely.
It's really been very exciting and very cool to see the really quality anthologies from the big collections like Pop Gun or you know, 24/7, all the great anthologies that have been coming out, but seeing some really neat single issue anthologies again, and I think that was missing for a while.
Yep.
And we've had some really good ones coming out in the last year or so.
Yeah, no, I'm glad to see the single issue, because I missed the single issue anthology, because, you know, Pop Gun is awesome and I love it, but it's a meaty read. So
yeah.
So Liberty Comics number 2, it's kind of hard to find, because I don't think it got ordered a bunch. But if you can find it at your store, or if you can order it out of one of the online retailers, something like that, pick it up. All the money goes to charity. It's a good cause.
It was published by Dark Horse last year. Is it Image this time?
I think it was Image last time. I'm pretty sure it was Image last
time. Hellboy was on the cover of mine last time.
He was, yeah, but Image published it. Kick-Ass is on the cover of this one.
Your point there, but whatever. Yeah. I think the last one was Dark Horse, but I think I've always tended to associate Dark Horse with CBLDF for some reason.
Yeah, no, I'm pretty sure the first one was Image. So
I will fight you. Sir.
All right. Back to our regularly scheduled.
Did you feel that? Did you feel that weight in the air? He was like,
"Yeah." There's so much tension on the show.
Oh my god!
So the book that was probably the runner-up for pick of the week was Adventure Comics number 3. Jeff Johns, Francis Manapul at it again.
Yeah, quite.
It was good.
This was the box, the book that I ticked the little box for when I went for my pick of the week. This book is never my pick. I never get a book like this in the week that I actually have the pick. I get the book that pisses everybody off. But on weeks that you guys do it, then I'm always like, oh man, Green Lantern was awesome. But this was, for one, it was really fun because, you know, having that Tim character be sort of on his own and seeing him. There's a lot of stuff that Connor probably liked about Red Robin when he liked it back, you know. But to see him with his friend, to see him try to sort of act like Batman, but also then just break down. It's like this alternate version of the Bruce Clark relationship, but it's, you know, the Tim Connor relationship, which is really nice. And then the fact that it was like the moment when he takes the hood off and like they sort of become open with one another and start talking, like it was really... That was really touching. It was really nice. And you know, again, you know, we'll beat this into the ground, but, you know, Francis Manapul killed it on this one, I thought.
Well, he's killing it on every issue, and it's just ridiculous. I mean, like, the full-page Red Robin on the motorcycle title page was just like, I was whack. Like, he's doing these full-page and two-page spreads that are just unbelievable.
Mm-hmm.
You know? But, yeah, no, I thought I this issue was great. I love the stuff in the beginning with Superboy and Crypto.
Mm-hmm.
Where Crypto was flying around, getting all his rogues and delivering them to Superboy.
Well, I know Josh and I are both dog owners, and so this I love this book because of the relationship with Crypto, who I think is, you know, this is just John's doing what John's does best, and that is taking silly concepts or characters that have been kind of pushed off to the side forever, and then brings them back, embraces them, and makes them not just enjoyable, but adds weight to stuff that you thought was pretty weightless before. Crypto, I've never cared about Crypto. Mm-hmm. He's one of my favorite secondary characters, you know, in DC now. I mean, that is a real character, and I thought that was a fantastic dog character moment between Ian and Connor.
The one page
where
he points at him and says, "Bad dog."
Bad dog.
He's getting mad, and then the dog looks at him, and it brought back to me every time that I was a jerk and been like, my dog doesn't know what I'm talking about, and it's not okay for me to be frustrated with him. And, like, they captured that in one page. It was actually really neat, which, you know, works for all sorts of things. You know, you can be with your friends or with your kids or whatever. Like, you lose your shit for a couple of seconds, and then like, the other person's just trying to be nice. You know, they're trying to help.
Yeah. I thought it was good. I mean, it had some action, but I think ultimately it had a lot more. But it, like, this book is ridiculously personal for some reason. You know, and like, I think it has to do with the, you know, the kind of emotions or the story that Superboy's going through. But also Manapul is illustrating that in his art.
Yeah, exactly. There's a friendliness to Manapul's art. And this is a book about friendships and connections and reconnecting. And I think that friendliness of his art is a perfect match for what they're doing.
Yeah.
What's interesting is that I never read a Connor Kent story in my entire life. I mean, literally. But now I feel like I've known this character forever. Like, and that's really kind of cool. Also, apparently, there's a backup story in this one.
Well, that's the thing
it's
about
really nice art.
The thing about the backup story, and that's really this is the reason why it didn't get pick of the week for me, was that I thought the Superboy story ended very jiltedly, and then it went right into the back. Like, I need a clear delineation between the main story and the co-feature.
Mm. Yeah,
you know, like there was no title page for the co-feature until like three pages into the story.
Yeah.
And if you missed the yellow box at the bottom of the Superboy last page, like I did when I was reading it on the bus, then you'd be like, what the hell is this? You know,
I think this is a growing problem in comics that I have personally, is that it was always the title page, you know, it was your first page or maybe your second page, you know, as a reveal page or whatnot. And then they started moving things maybe to the last page to, you know, like the end credits. Now it's like three pages in. I read a comic that was like 11 pages in, and they have the title page.
That's coming out of TV. Like the Battlestar Galactica cold open would end up being like 8, 10, 11 minutes long. I think 24 used to really push it. Not 24, Alias.
Yeah.
It was like 15 minutes into the show, and I think that's bleeding over into comics.
And DC's getting really bad about it. Like Marvel does more of the last page with the credits and stuff like that, which is fine, but like this issue, the Superboy story, the title page is 10 pages in.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that's halfway through the book.
And then you have them do the same thing with the Legion story. So I had no idea which one. I mean, the art obviously is different, but it's like, okay, whatever you're going to have a backup story or a co-feature, whatever they're calling it. It's like, okay, you need to know when one starts and one stops. So.
Yeah. By the way, I would like to not be on this bandwagon because there are going to be comments and emails and be like, what are you, stupid? There was a thing that said, read it next week. You two complain about this. I'm the art clearly changed. I was just making fun of the fact that there is a backup story in this that I tried to read and just do not for the life of me care about.
Yeah, well, it's Legion.
It's that's very nice looking.
Yeah.
And I'm sure it's good if you're into this kind of thing.
Yep.
That's what I'm saying.
Anyway, so so it's Venture Comics number 2. I love it. It's beautiful, and I can't wait for Manipul to do the Flash. So,
moving on. Good. I see that we have Uncanny X-Men 516 up next.
Or Walking Dead 66. Take your pick.
Oh, that wasn't as funny. Walking Dead 66 was the fifth part of 5 in the Fear the Hunters storyline.
Do I need to walk away, or
I think I can get around this.
Let's spoil the shit out of it and turn off iPods all over the world.
No, I just find fascinating. I think, and actually, Chris, I think you guys on a recent when I was on vacation, I let all my podcasts pile up, so I just binged on 11 o'clock on Word Balloon, on a whole bunch of other podcasts, and on one of them, you guys were talking about Walking Dead, and I forget who said it, but someone said there's this unspoken rule amongst us podcasters that don't spoil Walking Dead. We spoil every other book. We talk about what happens and everything, but for some reason, we protect Walking Dead.
It's amazing.
There is the golden apple at the top of the tree that says Walking Dead, and no podcaster is allowed to grab that apple.
We don't spoil Invincible, and we didn't spoil Why the Last Man.
Right. Yeah. Exactly. Yeah. It's amazing. I think I love that unspoken rule. So anyway,
this was a kind of a tour de force for Charlie Adlard. He got a lot more room to sort of build a lot of just a lot more emotional scenes than he had been in a lot of stuff before. There was a lot of sort of, let's say, emotional crescendos between the relationships between some of the characters, because the thing that happened at the beginning was so harsh and it had nothing to do with any of the zombies that it's something that they're all going to have to live with. And then at the end, there's a big reveal again, which feels like they've been stringing this thing out for a little while. It was a strong issue, though. It was very good, but it wasn't a blow you away kind of issue, because I felt like the meat of the issue of the story arc happened in the last issue. Yeah, the big moment was in the last issue, and this was just sort of cleaning it up, although in a very, very messy way.
Yeah, usually in comics, how they're structured is that you build up to a moment of action, and then it's a short resolution to that. And this was inverse. It was the main action of the book happened in the first couple pages, and then the rest of it was dealing with that. And that's kind of what Walking Dead is about in a lot of ways. Anyway.
Well done. Really, really good issue. Interesting. Like I said, it was one of Charlie Adlard's best for sure. Did a great job with this. Some very nice
stuff
in that one. And now, I was so excited about it before. I was like, oh, I wonder what Ron has to say about Uncanny X-Men 516.
Shut up, you. So Uncanny X-Men 561 is the first issue of the new Nation X kind of storyline. And if you see the cover, it's a big Magneto full face on the cover. Magneto is back. A reason why I wanted to bring this up, aside from the awful Greg Land art, was that essentially there's a 2-page explanation of how Magneto got his powers that completely how every now and then in comics there's that, it's not a retcon, but it's a what you didn't know, like an explanation of what happened behind the scenes that just,
I think that is a retcon.
Well, no, it's not a record. Well, essentially, what happened was, do you remember that whole endangered species beast trying to solve the M-Day thing that happened in the backup stories of X-Men books? That awful thing that Mike Carey did.
Sort of.
In that Beast is trying to solve the why there's no mutants thing, this the Scarlet Witch M-Day thing, and he went in the very beginning. He went to the High Evolutionary, and the High Evolutionary said, "No, I'm not going to help you." But for some reason, the High Evolutionary decided to help Magneto. Now, do you remember the Neil Gaiman Eternals or no, External or whatever, the Celestial story?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the Eternals.
Yeah. Remember how in that there was a Celestial planted himself in San Francisco in Golden Gate Park, just kind of standing there? Well, apparently, when Fraction and Brubaker started their run on X-Men, there was a skirmish with Magneto. Apparently, that was a diversion to the fact that the High Evolutionary absconded with that Celestial's brain.
What?
Yes, exactly. It says
Did he like use like a wrench and pliers?
Basically, it explains. He goes, this is the dialogue that Magneto telling how he got his powers back. We started in space. We devised a plan. We would start by lobotomizing a god and seizing his mind and all the power therein. And so we came here, where the dreaming celestial came to stand, for whatever obscure and arcane reasons one can ascribe to such beings. I, with artificially created powers, caused a distraction to make sure you didn't stop my associate as he absconded with the celestial. They just really like you
the
just
whole
wrote
thing a, or just his brain.
I don't. It just there's a little panel of like the High Evolutionary at the Celestial's head
because yeah. He's huge.
I know.
You would notice.
Yeah, I mean, in Guardians of the Galaxy, that's like a headquarters.
Right. Yeah. Exactly.
Literally
a headquarters. So apparently that the whatever they got from the Celestial was able to give Magneto his powers, but it's not a cure for M-Day because it broke the machine and it only worked once. But now Magneto's got powers. Talk about a contrived – like I know it's comic books and this is what the X-Men do, you know,
you
but like
– love this.
Yeah, I do. I do.
Mean, like, I've decided now that what happens is every three or four issues of the X-Men, you complain about, oh, such a contrived hackneyed device. You – love it. You have a spoon and a jar of whipped cream.
Yeah.
It's like nom 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 nom. I didn't use that internet meme. Fail.
Yeah. So fail. So yeah, so Magneto's back and Greg Land sucks. So
and Ron's abusive relationship continues.
Exactly. I do love
it. In my mind, by the way, Greg Land draws the same way he did when I first saw him on Nightwing in the late 90s, and I still quite like him.
You like Greg Land, wow.
I like Greg Land in 1998.
Wow.
And I've decided to give him the benefit of the doubt, and that's how I will think of him, because that's I'm a nice guy. That's why. Speaking of sort of anthologies.
Yes, sir.
That's what we call a late segue. House of Mystery Halloween Annual number one of a well-planned event, or book, I must say, from Vertigo came out this week. And I'm sure, Chris, you read this. Yes?
Yes, I did. What? Of course, I read all the House of Mystery. I love that series.
Why don't you tell us about it?
Well, we were talking about anthologies earlier and how the single issue anthology has been, we've been seeing a few more of them, but for folks that don't read House of Mystery monthly, you should know that that's your chance to get a little mini anthology in your comics every month, because the general concept of House of Mystery is that there is an overarching story that takes place in the House of Mystery, and there's a bar, which is a nexus point for all of these universes and the people that meet in this bar. There's no currency there except for the stories that they tell. So they basically have these stories which open up the door for awesome independent and maybe lesser known mainstream artists to come in and do a little story in each issue. And that is the basic concept of House of Mystery. This is the Halloween annual, and it is several stories that are built around a Halloween party in the House of Mystery, as Sig has, who's one of the main characters, does not like Halloween. And so she finds just a real quick costume in one of the rooms of the house, which is a mask, which she puts on, and in true
bad
House
move,
of Mystery.
Sig.
Yeah.
I mean,
yeah,
I
you don't
like, what you, look at that. Don't put that on your face, you moron.
You're in the House of Mystery. It's a grotesque mask. If you put that on, it's not going to come off. Come on. We all know this. And what the mask does, it attaches to her face and pretty what it kind of subjugates her to watching the actions of other masks in different worlds, and which is a really nice device to jump into the House of Mystery little mini stories. And what was at first really neat about it is that it was kind of a little tour around the Vertigo universe. Yeah. It's like, oh, here's a Constantine story. Oh my gosh, Constantine is showing up in House of Mystery. How awesome is that? And then
it also tied into what's going on in Hellblazer right now, which was kind of interesting.
Oh, really? Well, yeah. There's a Mike Allred story, which is for iZombie, which I guess is going to be coming out. There was a beautifully drawn Mark Buckingham drawn Kevin Nolan inked story with yes,
yeah.
It was fantastic. But I got about three quarters of the way through this, and I was like, son of a bitch, I just spent $5 on an ad for Vertigo Comics.
Really? It was a. I felt that way about the Allred story. That was the only one that I felt was out of place, I guess. I really liked the Constantine story. That was, I mean, there was an original story by the people who were doing Hellblazer, so and it's good, so that wasn't a problem. The story on its, one of the things that I got to say about House of Mystery is that I do like it, but I've sort of lost the thread of the main story a little bit.
It's I was thinking about this the other day, that something big needs to happen. There has been some big revelations in the storyline, but like something needs to happen.
I tend to not have a context for the big things that happen, I suppose, because I'm still a little less than connected with all of the people. Like I kind of I think there has to be a revelation. We have to know something soon. I think I know it's the House of Mystery, but we need a little light. It's getting to be a little bit like Lost season 2, where you're like, okay, you gotta explain.
Throw
something.
Me a bone.
Yep. I mean, it's well done. It's fun, and the stories in the middle are always the highlight of it.
Yes. You see guys like David Peterson and Tony Akins,
Jeff Lemire, tons.
Oh, nice. We need probably to mention the Madame Xanadu, which this is a chance for you to see Amy Reeder Hadley's art, which is absolutely beautiful.
It's very nice art. I didn't read the story.
Madame Xanadu can be a hard read.
Yeah, I was like, I don't know what this is. It's very nice looking. Yeah. Anyways, what's next? Apparently, that's what I skip things now. That's what I do.
that's what you do. Yeah.
but you know, this would be a bad thing. What you don't want to do is skip the sponsors of the show, because they bring the show to you. Hear what I did there? Hey, a bloodborne plague races across Germany. This is fictional, giving life to mechanized monsters that are hellbent and on leaving a bloody trail of victims in their wake. Known as demoniacs, these creatures have the perverse ability to meld with technology and wield it as an extension of their uncontrollable cyber rage. Standing in their way is civilization's last hope for a savior. Joseph Jobson, the mysterious lone rider, fuses with an unreal technology of his battle-tested motorcycle to defend man against machine. But the same tainted blood that supplies his strength threatens to devour his soul, leaving him nothing more than a murderous demon. Behold the Pale Rider. I wish I could say that like Johnny Cash. Blast Rider Part 1, available on October 20th from Funimation Entertainment. That's this Tuesday coming up. So if you're listening to this on Sunday or Monday, that's when you can find Blast Rider Part 1. Actually sounds quite cool. You can go to Funimation.com/Blast Rider to learn more about that. And we want to thank Funimation for sponsoring the show.
They do good stuff. I just rewatched all of the Afro Samurai. Which was awesome.
Well, if you keep listening later at the end of the show, the giveaway this week is a Funimation prize pack of DVDs, and it includes Afro Samurai, the director's cut.
Ooh.
So lucky winner's going to get that.
That ain't for kids. Tell you
20
what.
Minutes.
No, it's very pretty on Blu-ray, by the way.
Yes, it is. I've
very pretty.
There was a few books out this week that were new. I gave one a shot. It was Anchor Number 1 from Boom, and it's written by Phil Hester, who's been doing The Darkness over at Top Cow, and you know, as we talked about in the Top Cow show we did, he's got some skills. He did a little while back a special, like a Darkness special with Mike Oeming on art. I forget the title of it, but it was like a Darkness history thing that was all Vikings and magic and stuff like that, and it was really, really, really good. I feel bad for Top Cow because I should be able to say the name of it, but look it up. and so that's actually why I gave this a shot. Anchor Number 1 is, it takes place in Iceland, I believe, and a big god thing comes flying out of the sky to fight these other big monsters, and he doesn't remember anything about himself, but he's constantly sort of quoting scripture, but he doesn't know what the Bible is, and it's like a mystery, and a spunky doctor comes along and helps him out, and she's like, well, if you 'cause you're on fire, so why don't you stand next to the ice beast and melt him, and you've helped me, woman, and it's, who is this guy? He's kind of like the Hulk, but like wants to do good but doesn't know where he is or where he's come from, just, you know, knows he's supposed to go fight the big monster. And it's one of those things where if you like that kind of thing, you're gonna really like this a lot. I think it's gonna take a little while to get going, but it was a fun issue. It was really well drawn. It was just a cool, different kind of thing to reminded me of, like the kind of stuff that you would have seen out of Marvel in the '60s before they were completely doing, you know, just all superhero stuff. It was the kind of
he's kind of like Hellboy meets your drunk uncle.
Yeah, I'll give you that. Okay. It was a fun little thing to check out, though. So it's
Boom's been doing some Boomhead Uncle Scrooge this week, which is awesome.
Yeah, so, I love the diversity in their line.
Yeah, it's
okay, Vince.
No, hey man, I'm a big Uncle Scrooge fan. Augie turned me onto the wonderful world of Uncle Scrooge. So
hey, Life and Times of Scrooge McDuck. It's one of the high holy books.
Yep. So DMZ number 46 came out, and I've been complaining about DMZ for the past like year or so that it's been kind of wavering. And Brian Wood introduced something at the very end of this that could ignite the rest of the remaining, I think, year and a half left in the run of this book. I'm assuming it's going to end like around 60, like every Vertigo book. But introduced a character that has started up a radio-free DMZ and like a pirate radio station to kind of be a different voice, you know, to be a voice different than the government and different than Parco's government. And by the end of the issue, I was really like excited. So I'm hoping that DMZ ends on a high note.
Awesome. Speaking of high notes, you remember that Marvel's Project Number One was my pick of the week a while ago. Two was kind of fun, but three was really good. It was fun. There was a great scene with Namor, and I just love that they're really highlighting his ambiguity, I suppose. You know, like he's a good guy, he's a bad guy, and they're sort of exploring how that works at this time. It's just a fun issue, but I think more than anything, like I'm reading it just going, man, Steve Epting he was a guy. I mean, literally, you can go pick out issues of the Avengers from the 90s that Steve Epting did, and they don't look that good.
Oh, they look awful.
No, I mean, they're not good. Like we were looking at covers and literally laughing at them at one point because they're terrible. But at some point along the line, man.
He had the art epiphany where he's like, I'm going to be awesome now.
He is awesome. And it's a guy whose name doesn't get thrown around in that sort of high echelon context. And he is killing on this book. It's so good. The other thing that was really cool about it is that Ed Brubaker has really like decided somewhere along the line to really embrace like a noir vibe with this. And there's like narration talking back to the character. And I'm like, oh, that's how we're going.
Surprise, surprise.
No, I know, but it's funny. It's just, it's unabashed, though. It's not like a little bit. I was like, oh, it's just full on out. She knew what she was talking about, but I had to do something. I was, oh.
It's like, screw it. We're doing this thing.
So over across the street, Blackest Night continues. You got two books this week. You had Green Lantern Corps number 41, where the shit just keeps hitting the fan. So much. Tomasi packs so much action into this book. It's ridiculous. Yeah. And then Blackest Night Batman number 3, which I know you guys have been loving, but this ended with a bad taste in my mouth because it felt as if this didn't matter.
Well, of course it is. It's a mainstream comic. None of it matters.
Well, no, in the grand scheme of it, it's just, you know, like it actually ended with the sentence, so we can fight them tomorrow. You know, like.
Well, but you had Deadman possessing the demon, Etrigan,
which was
worth every single penny to see demon on a big splash page go, I'm coming and I'm bringing hell with me. Yeah. I was like, oh, yeah, that's cool. Good stuff.
He quoted Tombstone. Wow.
it's just I keep comparing this one to Blackest Night Superman, which I think is awesome. And
well,
this
is that Batman's not going to solve this problem.
Right.
So you know it's not going to be a thing. I think the value of this little mini was that there was some really nice character and relationship moments that happened in there. Some of the Dick and Damian relationship made some steps in this that I thought was really nice. Whether that gets reflected in other stories or not, who knows? But
as a non-Batman fan, I'm getting really tired of hearing about the Dick Damian relationship.
You have been reading Batman and Robin, right?
No, I haven't because of the art.
Well,
I stopped.
You will again. So
yeah, I will. Yeah,
but. So there.
And Kubert delivers an awful cover again. I've hated the Kubert covers on the series, but. Anyway.
Yeah, you know, I think it does reinforce the Black Lantern's need to have emotionally charged victims, and that's you know what they're doing through the entire issue is pushing all of Tim and Dick's buttons to get them as emotionally riled up as possible.
And that's the big mystery with the Black Lanterns that I figured out is that the Black Lanterns, you know, they've got powers and stuff like that, but no, they come back to make you feel bad.
Yeah.
Yes.
Like that's what, you know, like
they, then they, well, it's true. They feed off that anger and that energy. They try to get you as upset as possible, and then it's snack time, bitches.
Yeah. Now, and I haven't figured out if it actually gives them more power, if it makes for a more powerful kill, or if it just tastes better.
Yeah, I think it's probably the latter.
Yeah, which is kind of creepy.
It's like a fine gray salt. what's this Beast of Burden number one here?
Beast of Burden is maybe one of the coolest yet most confusing comics I've read this year. Confusing in a couple ways, and I don't mean that necessarily in a bad way. This is Beast of Burden, number one. It is by Dark Horse Comics. It came out in the last month or so. It is by Evan Dorkin of Milk and Cheese fame. Nice. And Jill Thompson. So we've got, you know, I did this just for you and me, Josh. This is our New York-Chicago hookup here. This is the New York writer, Chicago artist. So this, let me see here.
You're talking about an old book. Have you ever listened to this show? I was so confused because I knew, I was like, there was a book that came out that sounded just like that, but that was a few weeks ago, and we wouldn't do it.
Okay.
You're hot. Look at you.
You broke format on us.
Oh, my God. Oh, did I miss one?
You know who never did that? Tom Cater's never did that.
Okay. Well, you guys have talked about this. But what confused me about it?
We didn't talk about it at all yet.
Oh, okay.
It's just the fact that it came out a month ago.
What is I was interested in, but I didn't pick it up.
Think Our Gang with talking animals. It is a neighbor meets Buffy. So basically the setup is that you have this neighborhood of animals, dogs and cats, and they're all like Our Gang. It's like the little rascals in how they talk with each other and all that. But the town that they live in is called Burden Hill, therefore Beast of Burden. And think Hellmouth from Buffy. There's all sorts of weird supernatural stuff that happens in this town, evidenced by the first couple pages, it raining frogs, and then all of the frogs start eating each other and then running off into the woods.
It is a pet renaissance in comics right now.
Yeah, it is.
Crypto and the Pet Avengers, and then this.
Yep.
So all of these dogs and a few cats go off on this adventure into the woods to find out what's going on with these frogs and to find one of the other dogs that had run off, and crazy huge frog supernatural stuff happens, and so all of the dogs and these cats start fighting this supernatural hoo ha. Now, what confused me is that they reference a lot of stories that have already happened. And this is issue one. I'm like, okay, are they just throwing you in the middle of it here? But there had apparently, as you read in the letter section, there had been short stories that Evan Dorkin and Jill Thompson had done in some other Dark Horse different collections leading up to this. So there is some history to these characters. It's not integral to the story. And the other thing is that this would be an awesome kids book. But there's a pug in here that has he talks like a sailor, and it kind of takes away the kid friendliness of it. I mean, this could very easily be like a Bone-esque or a, you know, that kind of kids book. It's beautifully painted. You're dealing with talking animals, and I mean, it would be a great kids book. But yeah, the language in it gets a little. Yeah, I don't know if I would give this to like my 7-year-old nephew.
I thought that was an odd choice to put sort of Evan Dorkin on a book that looks like you could sell his, not to put him on because it's his book, but I was like, it was the disconnect.
Yeah, it's like it's almost an awesome kids book, but it just would have taken a little bit of cleanup, and I'm not one to be prudish about stuff, but I think they would have had a real hit on their hands dealing with like the kids market. But you know, it's a fun book. If you like the idea of talking animals fighting giant frogs in the woods and casting spells, there are dogs that are apparently magicians in this book. It's crazy.
Well then,
I've never seen that in the park, but I'll take your word for it.
cool.
We have a vital and vibrant user community, and they rate and review books all the time, and we like to take some time to make sure that their reviews are heard in addition to ours. So we have a couple of them that we like to highlight, and the first one is from maybe my new favorite username, Fraggle Uprising. He talked about Deadpool 900, gave the story a 3 out of 5 and the art a 3 out of 5. So he's noncommittal. And the pick of the week percentage on this was 2.3%. And he says, I've never read Deadpool before this, and I hadn't planned on picking the issue up, but I was won over when I saw the first two pages had the combination of Jason Aaron's name, a spaceship, and Deadpool in a car full of dead Russians. I don't know if I was going to get $5 worth of comic, but I was willing to take my chances. All in all, it was spotty, but okay. I laughed about as much as I groaned, and I liked it enough that I wouldn't be opposed to reading more Deadpools, but jeepers was this long. It took me 3 sittings to get through the whole thing. Is it possible this was almost too much comic? That doesn't sound like you liked it.
Well, he was middle of the road. He gave it a three out of five. So
that doesn't make me go back to the bar. That's what I'm saying.
Yeah, that's the one thing I've heard about this book. I mean, it was the big Daredevil Deadpool 900 issue that was packed with like all these kind of short stories by a bunch of different creators, continuing the mystery of Deadpool and why the fact that there is freaking three titles at Marvel right now featuring Deadpool. It's like,
craziness.
It's just the
I said Beast of Burden confused me, but yeah. You want to talk about something that's confusing.
Yeah.
Are there, what's the question? Is it possible that there's almost too much comic? In this case.
Yeah. Exactly. Well, anytime Deadpool's involved, I think there's too much comic. Oh!
Well, yeah.
Oh, God. But yeah, so, but it had a wonderful cover, so that's for sure. So.
It certainly did. Next
up. Next up, Changing Shades writes a review of Incredible Hercules number 136, where he gave the story a 5 out of 5 and the art a 5 out of 5. And at the time of writing this, 7.8% of you made it your pick of the week, which is astounding.
Wow.
Yeah. Changing Shades says, if you don't read and enjoy Hercules, you are dead inside and I weep for you. This book is awesome on a cracker. Seriously, there are not nearly enough comics with cheap shots like this in fights. Herc's antics are like a kegger in college. Turn off your brain and have fun with it, for God's sakes. That's not to say it didn't have its sweet moments too, but anymore I'm not making a pick of the week unless I can give it to someone on the street walking by and say, here, this is why it's awesome. Read this. If all comics were as awesome as this and Atomic Robo, I would never have any money ever. And continuing the fact that we don't read apparently the best book being published right now, Incredible Hercules number 136.
Who's we?
Us. iFanboy. You read this?
Heck, it's great.
Yeah.
Yeah. And it's so surprisingly good that I have to keep going back and picking it up. But yeah, it's been it's been a lot of fun. I think once it kind of got unencumbered from all of the event stuff, that it really, really took off. And Fred Van Lennie, just one of those guys that it's so sneaky good whenever dealing with superhero stuff. And yeah, Incredible Herc is a really fun Marvel comic. If you just love fun superhero, crazy mythology nuttiness, it's great.
I mean, there's a real momentum going on with this book. I can, what I mean? Like I'm sensing it now. Like every time it comes out, people are more and more excited about it. I read, last time we had Tom on, he was talking about it, and I read the issue, and it was good. It's not kind of my favorite kind of thing. It's one of those things I really want to like, but it just doesn't.
A lot of mythology stuff. If you're into mythology, it's smart writing. It's
good. So.
Yep.
Great Greek diners are like holy ground. I mean,
that's awesome. Yeah. So go to ifanboy.com/comics, and that's where you can find all the books that come out every week, and you could do your pull list, and you can come back and rate and review them and do your own pick of the week. So definitely do that. And if you need a place to pick up the trade of Incredible Hercules when it comes out, you can head over to InStock Trades. You can save up to 37% off, and they give free shipping on orders over $50. I got an update from our good buddy Zach over at InStock Trades. They've got over 9,000 trade paperbacks in stock. It's insane.
That's much higher than we
They got new releases listed every Wednesday. Usually if you make an order, it usually ships within 48 hours, and they pack it up all neatly and nicely. And in fact, they're hooking me up. I've been chasing after the Captain Britain omnibus, and they had it, and I'm gonna get it. So very excited for that. So thank you to Zach for taking care of me. And so head over to our good friends at InStock Trades, www.instocktrades.com, and that's where you can order all your trade paperback needs.
So. You know, I've been there. They are not lying about the 9,000 trades. I've been to the store.
I picture the warehouse at the end of Raiders of the Lost Ark, but all trades.
It is beautiful. It is glorious. I wanted to just sleep there. It was. Which, speaking of, the last time I was there, I picked up the hardcover for JLI.
I forgot to get it from you.
I forgot to give it to you whenever you're in Chicago, so I need to mail it to you.
You need
to
mail it to me. I thought about that while I was on the plane. I was like, son of a bitch.
Guys, time and a place.
I know. Anyway, onto the emails. Our first email comes from Gary, who asks, are there any series already collected in trade that you would consider getting in back issues instead? If so, why?
No.
I've gone back and bought the back issues of Transmetropolitan for no other reason than sentimentality. I've also bought back issues of The Invisible so that I would have access to the letter columns. I know Ron collects Old Uncanny, but what about Josh and Connor or Josh and Chris? Thanks. So do you have any desire to go back and get back issues anymore?
No.
I've done it. I did it for – I have every issue of Astro City.
Yep.
That's the only one I've ever done it for. I think – you know, if I had like a lot of money, I would definitely, like, I would love to have all the Watchmen issues. I would do that. I do have a sentimentality for certain things, but
I think there's a combination of two things. I mean, like I'm working on my Uncanny run, I'm working on my X Factor run, and I have a fledgling my New Mutants run, and I'm a fledgling Defenders run. But part of it's sentimentality, but then also think about somebody who's new to comics. Like, do you think it's wise for someone to go chase the back issues of Criminal for the back matter? Because that's not collected in the trades.
If you really want to.
Can't hurt.
I think it's less of a need for current books. I don't see any because I'm collecting the issues, but anything I'm reading, like, I don't feel the need to go back and get the issues of Y. Like, I bought that in trade and I'm okay with that. Or Walking Dead, for that matter. Yeah.
Well, if anything, it's the opposite. Like, I have all the issues of Y, and it'd probably be kind of cool if I just had them all on the shelf, but I don't really want to buy them again.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, some people just like old book, you know, like Tom.
Yeah.
So,
but Tom doesn't buy the issues. Tom gets the showcases and the essentials and stuff like that.
But he does.
Hell no. He's got closets full of old.
Well, he does. Yeah. He goes quarter bin diving. He does, but it's not. But yeah.
That's actual old books. But the thing is those have a whole different thing going on because they're a little time capsule. And like when we did the minis, I used to do that old ads feature. And so anything from, say, not 10 years ago back. Those are fascinating to read as issues. So there is an intrinsic value to those, but I think that for me it'd have to be something really special. I mean, it'd have to be the Dark Knight Returns issues or, you know, something like that.
Yeah. Interesting question.
Good answer.
So if you have any questions, you can email us at contact@ifanboy.com. And it's been a while since we've done the voicemail, so we want to get a couple of them quickly here. Our first voicemail comes from Ryan, who's got a question about a cartoon.
Hey, iFanboy crew. This is Ryan Williams, and I was wondering what you guys thought of a new fad that seems to be going around Marvel these days, the superhero squad from the line of toys, their own comic strip, and the new TV show that's airing on Cartoon Network right now. I just wanted to know if you've seen any of these episodes, if you've seen any of the comics or the toys, and what you think about the really cutesy, kid-like version of our favorite Marvel superheroes and villains. Thanks, and I love the show, and keep up the good work.
So this voicemail actually echoed a couple of conversations I had recently where people have asked me what I thought of the Marvel Superhero Squad. I haven't watched it because I don't really watch cartoons, but I also don't think I would watch it because it's not for me. It's for kids.
What do you think of that? Just the
ridiculousness of saying that on a comic book review podcast.
Right, exactly. but that's the thing. It's like, so like, you know, somebody the other day was like, God, did you see that? It looks so stupid. That's like all kiddified or whatever. It's like, that's the point. Like, if it gets 5-6-year-old kids knowing who Iron Man and Thor and Hulk and Cyclops are, then fine, great. Then they might read the freaking comics.
I don't have to like everything they do.
Exactly.
It's not for me.
It's not always for us.
That is an excellent take on it. You know.
Thank you.
Like, what'd you think of the Catwoman movie? I don't care. It's not for me.
Yeah, exactly.
It's like this rare moment of clarity.
Yeah, exactly.
I'm gonna adopt that. That is, wow. That's good stuff.
So if you have a 6 or 7 or 8 year old, let them watch Marvel Superheroes.
tie that child down, pry their eyes open. You will watch this.
Like a Clockwork Orange.
You just got a rare glimpse into Ron's childhood, so that was fun.
Get in the box.
All right, our next voicemail has got a question about some other kinds of comics.
Hi, this is Sam from Wisconsin, and I just have a question for you guys. I was recently reading the Peanuts comic, and I was really enjoying it, and I realized how you guys never really talked about the Sunday comic strips or comic strips in general. So I was just wondering if you guys read them, and if you did, what was your favorites? All right, I love the show. Thanks very much. Bye.
Now, those are in newspapers?
Yes, they are.
Is that where those show up?
What are newspapers?
I don't know. It's not really a question you're going to have to bother answering for much longer.
So did either of you read the Sunday comics ever in your life?
When I was
absolutely.
Yeah, totally.
You know when I stopped?
When?
Calvin and Hobbes. When Calvin and Hobbes wrapped up, there was no reason for me to read Sunday f- bunnies anymore.
I read everything that Calvin Hobbes did, but I never read those in the newspaper. I always read those in books after.
Oh, I read the. That's actually funny you say that, Chris, because I think that's. I was a devout Sunday Comics reader. Peanuts, Dagwood,
Farside,
Berkeley Breathe, the Bloom County stuff, which is IDW collected recently, which you have to get.
Oh, it's awesome.
It's in comics.
Yeah, it's awesome.
Calvin and Hobbes, and then more recently, Dilbert, and I actually do enjoy Zitz, which is a fun and baby. No, is it Baby Blues or there's one about like this.
Do you read them regularly?
No. Because I don't get a paper anymore. That's the thing. Right. Yeah. But the thing is, when I go home and I stay with my sister, they get the Sunday paper, and I always read the comics.
What year do they live in? No, I
get the paper.
Really? Well, you're old.
Yes,
you're old.
Oh.
No, I mean, but like,
I actually wait at like 4 o'clock in the morning to make sure that he's not late delivering it as I eat my oatmeal.
Really?
On the front porch.
It's all that he can digest.
Oh, not really.
it's the only thing he can eat anymore. The doctor's got him on pills. And anyway, I read Dilbert, but I read it on the website.
Yeah.
That's what I read that regularly. I hate to sound like also an old man, but comics suck now.
Yeah.
Not a joke to say that if you pick up a comic section in any newspaper right now, for the most part, you could be like, this is so not interesting and it's so watered down and not funny that I just gave up on them at some point.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But I also, it's important, I also consider it a very different medium than comic books.
Yeah.
It's not.
Oh, yeah.
Really?
It's very different. Yeah.
They're related tangentially, but not really.
Well, the thing that I think whenever we were all growing up, there were comic strips that were in the, that were a part of pop culture. Garfield, Calvin and Hobbes, Farside.
Man, I was caught up in For Better or For Worse for like 15 years.
Okay. These were well-known household name comic strips. And I don't know if there are any comic strips out there that your average Joe on the street even has any idea.
I think Boondocks was probably the last major comic strip to actually have any kind of impact.
Because they made a cartoon of it.
Right. No, but even before that. But then also look at how different Boondocks was comparative to the Peanuts. It made an impact because it was against that, I suppose. So it was already working, against the idea of what comic strips were. And now they wouldn't even have anything to comment on because Funky Winkerbean? Come on.
Anyway, so I'm nostalgic for the comics, and Wednesday Comics touched on that a little, but I think the heyday of the Sunday Comics is kind of long gone, unfortunately. So, all right. So if you have any questions, you can call us and leave a voicemail at 1-888-FANBOYS. It's 1-888-326-2697. Call in, keep it to about 30 seconds. Let us know your name, where you're from. We definitely want to hear from you. So, please call into the voicemail. All right, well, now's that time. We talked about it earlier that there would be we're doing a giveaway this week. Last week we gave away the Top Cow prize pack, and this week we've got a prize pack of some DVDs from Funimation. The DVD pack includes Beck Mongolian Chop Squad, the complete series, the Witchblade complete series, Afro Samurai, the director's cut, and Vexil, which is supposed to be awesome.
It is very, very visually stunning.
Yes. So the winner of that prize pack is Jonathan Merrifield. So congratulations, Jonathan. Jonathan is a member of iFanboy, and that's how you can be eligible to win these giveaways. And you can go to iFanboy.com. There's a red post right on the homepage about the October giveaways. The next prize pack is pretty sweet, and Josh is not eligible. It is a collection of Inhumans comics from the 70s with some amazing artists, including one Jack Kirby.
Oh, yeah, those are gone.
Oh,
they're gone now.
There was a shipping mishap.
You ain't going to hear from them no more.
So congratulations, Jonathan, and go to iFanboy.com to see about other future giveaways and how you can become eligible.
Well, the best way for you to become – the only way for you to become eligible for those is to become an iFanboy member. The iFanboy members are the people who really help us keep this whole thing going, the podcast and the website and all those things. And we are eternally grateful to you. And we wish we could give prizes to all of you, but that's a lot of mailing and money. If you want to become an iFanboy member, you can go to iFanboy.com/store. And for a simple $4 a month, that's the cost of one bad comic book. Most of you buy a lot more than that. You can very easily help out. Or $42 a year if you want to do it all as one shot. You get an iFanboy prize. pack. That's a little some buttons, a sticker, and you'll get a random comic book. If you really, really want to be generous, no way required, but if you want to, you can also go for $10 a month or just $100 a year. With that, we'll also throw in an iFanboy member t-shirt. So that is the best way, the one that we like the most if you want to help iFanboy out. But there's also other things you can do that are nice and easy and don't impact on your life at all. Make sure you click the banners when you're at iFanboy.com and check out the sponsors. We are making sure that we have links to the sponsors in the show notes for this podcast now, so you can check out the stuff of the people who are supporting us, and we always appreciate that. You can go and you can order one of our t-shirts at iFanboy.com/store. iFanboy.com/store. You can get the Power and Responsibility t-shirt or the Herm shirt, which will be back soon. We're pre-ordering them now.
Yeah, no, it's actually both the I know some members have been new members are waiting on their t-shirts as well as the Herm shirt. They're at the printers right now. We should have them in a couple of about a week or two. So,
and yesterday, Dave Gibbons remembered and said, he says he wears his Herm shirt all the time, and that was awesome. Ooh,
that was pretty cool.
That was like, I was like, what a wonderful day. both of those shirts are $15, and there's only a limited number of them. So if you want one, order it. That would be good.
Yeah. So the fact that we gave Gibbons a Herm t-shirt is like unbelievably epic.
This is referencing nothing. We just think it would look good on you. Right, it means absolutely nothing.
Exactly. Exactly. So please head over to ifanboy.com/store, and we thank everybody who's helped out so far. So
I love my Power and Responsibility shirt. I wear it all the time.
Oh, you're the best, Chris. So Chris, you are a veritable cornucopia of podcasting. Aren't you?
Something like that.
Yeah, for those who've never heard of you, what do you got going on?
Probably the one I spend the most time on is Around Comics, and we've been going for about 5 years. If you listen to Comic Book Podcast, you've probably at least seen it out there. So we just came off of vacation. Actually, as this episode of iFanboy comes out, our first Around Comics episode in a month is coming out today, and we have Tom Caters and Mike Norton and Christian Alame, who is the inker on Green Lantern these days, for a really fun conversation. So yeah, I do Around Comics and other one.
Well, before with the new Around Comics, how do you think the audience is going to react to the new format change?
The new format
it's like a 2 minute quick hit format, right? Like you talk about something for 2 minutes, and then there's a loud donkey bray, and then you have to change subject, and if you don't, you get the hose.
Yeah, lots of bang, pow. Yeah, it's total. There's Russian dancers. It's right. Awesome.
I'd like to point something out. I just did a quick check yesterday on iTunes, and you have 388 ratings, and you're averaging 5 stars, and that is pretty impressive.
That's awesome.
It's almost as impressive as having 590 and averaging 5 stars.
Oh, but son of a bitch. Son of a bitch.
No, it's nothing to feel bad about.
No, yeah, exactly.
There was a time whenever we were like neck and neck, and then I don't know who you guys paid off, but you just like took off, and I'm like, okay,
we don't have to pay anybody off.
hold on, I'll take care of this, and then we went back to sleep.
It's like it's no fun. It's no fun poking fun back and forth whenever they just dusted us. Yeah. So the thing about podcasting, and I'll be real quick and real brief here, is that I've been really lucky to be on two shows that the chemistry is really great with all the people that are involved, and I've developed friendships on both Around Comics and the other podcast, 11 O'Clock Comics. They're two very different shows, but I know people from all parts of the country now because of these shows, and you guys are an extension of that. It's like, you know, I consider each and every one of you, even Connor, who won't be here, you know, with me.
That's the real reason why we haven't had you on, is because the Connor Chris riff.
San Francisco.
Yeah. Let's not talk about that.
Yeah. Whenever we shared that room in San Francisco, yeah, I'm sorry, awkward. Connor. but no, it's I mean, you guys are friends just like the other guys on Around Comics and 11 O'Clock Comics. So it's podcasting has been really good to me in meeting some awesome comic book fans and just good people around the country.
Podcasting has been better that we don't get any money for it.
So 11 O'Clock Comics as well, right? Where
yep. 11 O'Clock Comics bullpen.com, I think, or bullpenbulletinspodcast.com. I don't know. David and Vince.
Yeah,
11 o'clock comics. And that comes out every Thursday or Friday, depending on when Vince gets done editing. And that's just four guys that sit around, have a cocktail, and talk about psychotropic drugs and comic books.
Yeah, it's creepy sometimes.
A little bit.
Excellent. Well, we thank you for coming on, Chris. We appreciate it. Oh. Long time friend of the show, so it's overdue.
Well, thank you for having me. Hopefully, I didn't bore you to tears.
From now on, people will maybe know that we're joking.
Yeah, maybe they'll figure it out.
Oh no, I'm going to do something mean tomorrow, and that'll set it all off again.
Set fire, yeah. Exactly.
I hope someone's listening.
Yeah. The people actually didn't get that all of the. Was just joking between
us. Yeah, they really. I got so many emails, like, why are you so mean around comics? You know, that it's like.
I like that you were the around comics with a little boy in this. What are you picking on them for?
Exactly. Yeah.
They can't help it.
Anyway, so
maybe it was whenever I started the Better Than I fanboy tag on.
Yeah,
Twitter.
That was funny. So and people can find you on Twitter at twitter.com/cNeisman. Right?
Yep. Okay. That's right.
Very cool. So speaking of podcasts, our sister podcast, Murmur, had a new episode come out last Tuesday, episode number 9. Myself, Paul Montgomery, who also writes for iFanboy, as well as our friend Ryan Panagos, who you might know as Agent M on Twitter, works at Marvel. We were on talking about some movies, talked about some music and some technology stuff. So if you want to check that out, go to murmur.com. It's a good time.
Yeah,
so.
I learned that I never want to be on a music podcast with Ron. Because I would just go, oh, that's awful. Oh, that's awful.
Did you not like anything in that patch?
I hated every single thing you played. Although
I thought you would have liked girls and fun.
I hated. It was awful. Yeah. And you like girly singers. Boy, girly singers. That's what I've decided.
There was some harder stuff at the end.
Yeah, but that was like being in 1994. It was horrible. But that's however, Paul, I could listen to Paul give a comment.
Oh, it's my new favorite thing is Paul talking about music.
In my notes, I had Boardwalk with Paul. I was like, yes. Oh, listen to that. It's entertaining. That's what I was saying. Hey, get over to ifanboy.com to read Ron's full pick of the week review and all the discussion that goes on after that. And then if you go to ifanboy.com/comics, every book has its own discussion going on about it. You can write your own reviews, do all sorts of stuff. Of course, on the main page, there are new stories going up every day, stuff about things that are going on in the industry and opinion pieces from the fantastic writing team that we have that Chris is no longer writing for. And
he's on the reserve. He's on the bench.
He got too busy. That's fine. He blew up. Look for ifanboy.com/about, and you will see stuff about all the people who write on the site, links to us, social networking, stuff like that. And look out soon for the return of the iFanboy video show. Wheel is out in motion.
Yes. I might be filming this weekend for that, maybe.
My God.
So
maybe I'll decide to start drinking again and writing about it.
What, decide to start drinking again? Seriously?
You've got the drink right now.
Yeah. You have to be very conscious about this. Like, maybe I should start drinking again. I think these things.
What, like every hour you have that thought or what?
It is 10 a.m.
Well, we see here. It is 12:17.
It's noon somewhere. In Chicago.
I my first boss had a clock that all of the numbers were 5.
Nice. Well done. So if you like the show, you got a question for us, you can email us at contact@ifanboy.com or you can leave a voicemail at 1-888-FANBOYS. It's 1-888-326-2697. Any questions or comments or anything, leave your name. Tell us where you're from. We'd love to hear from you. And if you like us and you don't like Around Comics, you can go write a review on iTunes. But while you're there, write a good review about Tom vs. the Flash. As well as iFanboy, or better yet, tell your friends, tell your comic book store about iFanboy, about Around Comics, about 11 O'Clock Comics, about Tom vs. Flash, about Word Balloon, about Comic Geek Speak, about Pipeline, about all the great podcasts that are out there. Wonderful world of people talking about comics. We love all the podcasts. Congratulations to CGS, which got over 700 episodes recently. Mm-hmm. So that was good. That was a good time.
Last week.
Yeah. So very good. That episode was entertaining.
They went from 5 to 700 just last week.
Yeah.
Impressive. That was a big week.
Yeah. So, cool. Well, Chris, thank you for joining us. We appreciate it.
Oh, thank you for having me. And, we need to return the favor here and have you guys on AC. And thank you, Ron, for coming out and visiting over Windy City. It was great to hang out with you. And maybe next year, Josh and Connor can make it out.
I wanted to go. Don't get me wrong. I was like,
oh, I know.
Wish I was there. Ugh.
You got little things and ovens and stuff there in New York. You got to work.
Well, that doesn't
about.
Sound creepy.
Stay in the oven.
You have You ha- and congratulations. I heard that you guys have a son on the way.
That's the, what they tell me.
The first official iFanboy.
Yeah.
Nice.
Yeah.
Just, I'm not. By the way, not naming him after a comic book character. The
joke. Oh, good for you.
You know how obvious. You know how obvious that would be.
You're naming him after me, right?
I was gonna say his name's gonna be Ron. Ron.
Ronald J. Richards Jr. Jr. Flynn.
All right.
Well, at least he doesn't look like Ron, hopefully. Wink, wink.
Oh, hey-o.
Because he's ugly.
Oh. Way to spin that one around, Josh. Anyway. So, all right. So until next week, I'm Ron.
I'm Chris.
That's right. I go last, newbie. I'm Josh.
I won't be back next week.
In measured hundredweight and penny pound, when the man comes around.
Of the four beasts, and I looked, and behold, a pale horse, and his name that sat on him was Death, and Hell followed with him.
This episode is brought to you by BetterHelp. How's your social battery doing right now? I've never used that phrase, but I instantly know what it means, and I think it's interesting because it works two different ways. Some people need to have their social battery charged, and they this is the introvert-extrovert thing, and some people, you know, like, they've got enough energy for other people, but then it's time to sort of step away, and, you know, as we get to this part where winter is ending, which, again, it's opposite. I love winter. I don't need it to end. You know, you start getting together with more people, and it can be a little draining on top of every other thing that we all have going on in our lives. I just assume everybody's overburdened because I think everybody's overburdened. But it can be tough to deal with. And also, one of the things is, like, you can't necessarily understand why you feel that way or why it's making you tired, but it's a real thing. If you think that you could use some help with it, if you could figure out a way to make things better, therapy is a great way to help. It can give you that kind of self-awareness to know how to ride that level just right so that you you feel good, you feel right. If you're thinking of starting therapy, you can give BetterHelp a try. It is entirely online. It is designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule, which is, again, we've been talking about being busy, right? You got to fit that in. You got a lunch period. You can do it during that time, whichever. That's possible. You fill out a brief questionnaire and get matched with a licensed therapist. You can switch therapists at any time for no additional charge. I like that. There is no penalty for finding the person who is right for you. Find your social sweet spot with BetterHelp. Visit BetterHelp.com/iFanboy today. Get 10% off of your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.com/iFanboy.